How are you all feeling about just the Blazer upheaval slash, you know, the very hard shift towards the future that actually is a shift towards the future, because we're just kind of hanging there for a minute.
Yeah, honestly, like, Tara and I talked about this a little bit earlier today, but, like, I'm feeling quite relieved because I felt like that trade request was sitting on our backs for, like, months, and it felt like years, and I wanted to see what the direction of the team was going to be, and now we, like, finally have, like, a more definitive answer of, like, what they're trying to do.
This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. The world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett. Along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum.
This is the best of the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett, and along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. You can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. Make sure to follow us on twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's Numbers with a Z, or the Numbers Podcast Network on thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's Numbers with a Z, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Help support this channel and get early access to videos plus exclusive content and patrons-only live discussions by becoming a member at patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. This is the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial, and I have some special guests with me, Rose Harding, Tara Bowen-Biggs from the We Have a Take podcast, and I'm going to do it Bill Simmons style. We're recording on October 1st. At 2:12 p.m., a lot of Blazer news has happened in the last few days. When we originally scheduled all of this, none of it had happened. So this whole show is going to be different but fun. So yeah, we've got big Blazer news. The WNBA Finals is officially set. The Aces and the Liberty, and yeah, we got a lot to talk about, but. The big thing, obviously, this week, Damian Lillard officially moved to Milwaukee, and Blazers get back DeAndre Ayton. Guy's name is Lou, is not coming to my mind. So not Drew. The person who's
sorry.
Yeah, but because Drew Holiday was also moved this afternoon. Or Robert Williams, aka Time Lord, and Malcolm Brogdon, which I'm not sure how long that's going to last, but and picks. So, yeah, how are you all feeling about just the Blazer upheaval slash, you know, the very hard shift towards the future that actually is a shift towards the future, because we're just kind of hanging there for a minute.
Honestly, like, Tara and I talked about this a little bit earlier today, but, like, I'm feeling quite relieved because I felt like that trade request was sitting on our backs for, like, months, and it felt like years, and I wanted to see what the direction of the team was going to be, and now we, like, finally have, like, a more definitive answer of, like, what they're trying to do. We get to see, like, you know, the players that they wanted to bring in and the picks, like, that they're like looking for. Like, I was the biggest surprise to me, honestly, was that the picks were so far in the future. So it meant that they weren't just going for like this full rebuild now with like, what can we get now? It was also looking a little bit toward the future because some of those picks aren't coming. The picks and pick swaps aren't going to be till like 2029, 2030. Like, that's like quite far down the road, but also from coming from these teams that are like contenders now and are relatively older. Like, I don't know. It's interesting to see like the pieces fall into place and see the plan, like the 5-year plan, I guess. Tara, what'd you think?
As a fan, I feel unstuck. You know, like, remember when the ship got stuck in the canal and everything just like backed up behind it and it was like nothing could move. And I feel like until we knew what was going to happen as a fan, like, we didn't really know what to do. We didn't know what the we had an idea of what the plan was for the future, but we didn't know who was going to be in the future. We haven't really been able to celebrate Scoot because Scoot coming in meant Damian moving on. We didn't know where Damian was going to go, if we were going to be happy for him where he landed. And I couldn't be more excited that he went to a small market team where he could immediately contend with Giannis and Terry Stotts, by the way. So I just feel like everything had just been stuck, and now we can finally move on, like, as a fan base and get excited about the future. And it's okay to get excited now because we know what was going to happen. How about you, Bruce?
So Rose, you're talking about just like the picks in the future, and I'm just thinking about this roster going into next year again. What remains to be seen what happens with Malcolm Brogdon, but you got Scoot, you got Ant, who's, you know, not exactly a slouch. Like, could probably give you 25 a night, especially in this role. Obviously, Shaden, Jeremy's back. DeAndre Ayton is now here. And Robert Williams. Like, they have, like, a whole front court and everything. Like, what is going on? But I think they could, they could at least contend for, like, a playoff spot next year with this kind of, like, young team. Obviously, youth can sometimes get in the way of that, but I think about it, like, it's not full OKC, we have 30 draft picks for the next 5 years, but it's very much kind of like following that timeline, but also with a team that can be competitive. I mean, Terry, you talk about not really getting to enjoy Scoot, and I just think about, I mean, because he only played what, a half of summer league. It was a fun half though. And even just watching him, I just think about when they mic'd him up on the bench, and it's like, I'll never get over just the commentators basically just realizing, you know what, we're just going to let Scoot run. Just let him call the game on the bench, come back and answer questions effortlessly, hype up his teammates. Let's just let him run the show. And it's just like, you know, I hate seeing Damian Lillard go. I really do. But, you know, if I was thinking about someone who could be, you know, potentially lead the ship going forward, like, Scoot is that guy. Like, I believe in Scoot. So I want to bring it back, though. You know, we started this off just, there's news. Yeah, we got to talk about news. But you all had me on We Have a Take earlier this summer. And one of the things we just talked about was, like, how we consume basketball media, which I think is very pertinent to this story. So before we get to that, though, I do also want, I'll just talk a little bit about the We Have a Take podcast for those who may not be familiar, first off.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the We Have a Take podcast has been around for a while, but what we like to say is that we're a boutique podcast because we are small and not for everybody. We typically don't go, like, in depth on analysis and trades and, you know, potential trades and things like that. We just talk about how we feel about stuff, and it's completely okay to feel about stuff because we're fans and we really come at it from a fan perspective. And part of being a fan is how you feel about stuff. So on the We Have a Take podcast, we talk a lot about, we do deep dives into the players and where they came from and learning about how they came up through the ranks and, like, what their high school was like and what their mom and dads do for a living, and just have a really fun time getting to know every player. And boy, do we have a lot of work ahead of us. Actually, the last few seasons, we've had a lot of work. I remember, like, looking up, trying to learn about Eric Bledsoe. Like, I had to learn about Eric Bledsoe because he was on the team. So anyway, We Have a Take is we try to fill a niche that isn't filled by other podcasts and complement what's already out there by just, having a chance to bring on other fans and media members to talk about what they see and how they feel. It was awesome having you on because we got to fan out and we also got to hear sort of your perspective and lens about the media, which is really important for fans to have an idea about. So I don't know, that's my sort of elevator pitch about the We Have a Take podcast. Rose, would you add anything?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we try our best to do on our podcast is like we were like, I think the part of the reason why we don't do like analysis and stuff like that is because there's brilliant analysts out there. And that's like not why Tara and I are fans. It's like not like a big part of who we are, is like digging through analytics and, you know, like, I don't know, looking at scouting reports. Like there are people who are much better at that stuff than we are. And so we're here to talk about the things that we think we're good at, which is having a lot of feelings about being a fan, because the fan experience is like unlike anything else, where you just sort of have to like suspend your disbelief about a lot of things and look past like any one type of statistic or whatever. Like we try to see like the whole players as they are. We try to like love them for who they are and who what they bring to our team and also what they bring to our community. And I mean, I don't know, that to me is like our my favorite part of what we do, because it's a good reminder for us to embrace all the other stuff that comes with being a fan of a team that is not just on the court. Like these people, like the people who play on our team live in our community, they do good works, they have charitable like parts of the of their identities, like, you know, guys have their hobbies. We love to know about guys' pets. We usually give out an award each year for most valuable pet for the player's pet who contributed the most to the team, whatever that means to you. Anyway, it's just a really good way for us to remember that these guys are part of the Portland metro community, Oregon community as a whole, and we want to celebrate them and what they bring to our team and the thing that makes us a fan. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just find it very refreshing. But even like when I think about like the, you know, national media, some, not all, there's some people obviously doing great work out there, but there's certain people where it's like their thing is analysis, but actually, we'll name names because I will never be on ESPN or Fox Sports One or whatever. But like, where I see Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless talk about their journalism degrees doing something that they are clearly not using it for, like that always kind of gets me, because it's just like, no, you're just throwing stuff out there right now, and you know your audience, you know what points to hit, and that's fine. But yeah, it's just like, guys, you know what it is. Or on the flip side with like analytics, because I think about this with the Nurk trade especially, and a lot of people are like, why would the Suns want to trade for Nurkic? He's in this percentile of this and this percentile. He spent the last few years trying to cover up for a team that's not good at defense. Like it's not exactly a great measure if you're trying to be like, oh, well, he can't do this. No, have you watched the games? Have you watched like what it actually looks like? Like, so I've been predicting to people, it's like the Nurkic redemption year is coming. You know, while they'd be like, why would the Suns trade for Portland's, you know, front court? Because Drew is also there, which I think is funny. Actually, and now Nas as well. So, you know, interesting infusion. But yeah, during that episode earlier this summer, we also talked about, again, media and how we're consuming, you know, where do we get our basketball news from? So with Damian, you know, making a trade request, obviously that I will say, I'll just be upfront, I did not make it very long into that news cycle before I decided, you know what, just wake me when the trade happens. I have a specific friend, I hope he watches this, because I've told him that line verbatim so much that it's like this little tagline now. Because he hit me with like all the, you know, all the Aaron Goodwin updates and all these things. It's like, this just feels like horse trading. I don't know. But yeah, it's like I watch a lot of Dan Le Batard, who's, you know, based in Miami, just because I find that he's able to like mix and match the like some of that journalism, but then also just like a certain tone of irreverence that just works. And yeah, for most of the summer I was like, I can't, not with this Dame trade news and just like Miami trying to like, well, I shouldn't say Miami trying to force this through, because I feel like Aaron Goodwin might have had a little something to do with that as well. But it's just like, yeah, I can't do this. So now that all this has gone through, I feel like safe to watch Le Batard and friends again. But anyways, yeah, where were you all going if you were going for news updates on the situation during this, was it 3 months? Yeah, something like that.
I hate that I'm still looking at Twitter. I wish we could find an alternative for it, but it is still reliably not only where I can like find Woj and Shams, you know, the news breakers, but I can also find my community that I've grown close to in the last like 5 years who will understand how I'm feeling and what I'm thinking about. So I did go to Twitter a lot more than I intended. I was like gonna leave it and everything, but it's like you go to Blue Sky and it's like I'm waiting, somebody say something. So for now I did that. And so I went, you know, Woj and Shams for like the immediate updates. And man, you took the smart route, Bruce. Like getting away from all of this was the smart thing to do, because there were like weeks where Woj would be, you know, tweeting and retweeting, you know, the guys who were being brought into training camp. And every time you get a Woj notification, be like, this is it. And it's like, so-and-so is like, you know, joining the Charlotte Hornets on a 10-day or so, or on a on exhibit 10. And it was just like, oh my gosh. So it was like your heart rate is going up and down. But I listened to them. And then locally, and we actually talked about him when you came on our podcast, Sean Hyken feels like he's had his ear both to the players involved and to the front office, and is savvy at kind of helping people understand the media. And he even went back and looked and did like a synopsis of what it was like when Walton and Drexler were traded, and, you know, talked about what that was like. And so I was like, oh, well, Dames is never going to get that messy. Whoops. But he's been a local source that I've been going to.
I also like Sean Hyken. And like, honestly, when news breaks, like I know the news doesn't often break with him, but I wait to read what he writes about the breaking news before I try to form any opinions, because I feel like a lot of the times the people who break the news are breaking the most like PR focused version of whoever their sources were for their particular piece. And so like I know that when like a big story comes out, like there's going to be like two or three more that are related, and they're going to be from other points of view. And I like don't want to form an opinion based on that first one, because you know it's never exactly that way. It's almost like I need to like aggregate different people's versions together and decide which I think makes the most sense. But honestly, like I'm very comfortable at this point in my like media consumption life accepting that I'm never going to know what happened behind the scenes, because I'm only going to hear the PR polished versions that whoever the sources are for all the different articles that were written about it wanted me to hear. And it's probably somewhere in between all of those things, and plus a little bit of extra that probably makes everyone look bad that nobody wants to say out loud.
Yeah, I think, Terry, you're kind of like breaking it down before we start recording, where it's like you go to Woj, like, breaks the big news story. Shams gives you the agent's point of view. Chris Haynes gives you the player's point of view, essentially. And obviously there's more reporters out there. There's more things. I think, again, as the person who like opted out, I had a friend who was kind of detailing, I don't even want to call it like the Aaron Frentress heel turn, but it was kind of like how it was described to me. I was like, that's interesting how this like plays out in these media stories, and like how people, obviously it's not like uncommon, you know, people talk about, you know, Brian Windhorst covering LeBron from a young age, and that's probably might have had something to do with helping the path to get to ESPN. Even Chris Haynes, when he was here in Portland, as close as he was to Dame and CJ, probably didn't hurt, you know, when ESPN is looking for news, looking for, or it's the ESPN or TNT, forget which one he's at currently. But yeah, just like how these moments become like, in the media circles anyway, they're like the come up, or, you know, the it's like the musical chairs of it all is genuinely fascinating to me.
Go ahead. I was just gonna add something with regards to Chris Haynes, because it's been so fascinating, you know, watching his career. I think he might be with Yahoo and ESPN right now, but I'm not 100% sure. But he's been around. But
that's right. I think it's or Yahoo and TNT.
Okay. But it's been really cool knowing that he was in Portland and like really is genuinely close to Damian Lillard. And so like with regards to like everybody's publishing different points of view, just like you were saying, Rose, and you have to like know where it's coming from, whatever. And we know that, you know, Chris Haynes really comes, you know, a lot of what he reports, he gets directly from Damian because Damian is like a guy that he's very close to. And so in addition, though, I think it is cool to have these different perspectives, because I was listening to Chris Haynes on his podcast with I was listening to that podcast and I got a really interesting perspective that Haynes didn't really write about in the article, where he was like actually talking to Damian when the trade came through, and he was able to kind of talk about as a friend how he listened to and saw Damian like process the understanding and the impact of this trade. And so like not everybody gets that kind of a glimpse. And so, you know, there's a place for everyone. And so you have to like read it knowing where it's coming from, but then also appreciating the unique perspective, because we got something, you know, painting a picture of what Damian Lillard's life was like when it got completely upended. You know, from somebody that he trusted, you know, enough to talk through about that.
And who's been there to see his, like, you know, his career evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he like watched him rise to superstardom, like right up close. And he got to see like a big, massive shift in his whole career.
Right.
So interesting to think about how some reporters really like lean into those like personal relationships with their sources. And I think some others like maybe hold them at like a slightly different distance than that. And I don't know how you decide which kind of reporter you're going to be. And maybe it's like a difference between like younger reporters, like new school and old school styles, but like it definitely not everybody has the same approach.
Yeah, I'll just use a vocabulary word for anyone watching. We also talked about U of O on the last episode with you all and Info Health specifically. So do a little journalism nerding out here, but there's a term called access journalism, which is essentially, you know, getting, you know, close to the subject, the interviewer. And yeah, it's definitely decidedly not old school. I am objective. I didn't say objective, but it's just like, it's very much that perspective. It's like leaning into the player's perspective. And like you get access journalism in politics and areas where it's much more problematic. In sports, I can see certain, like, there are definitely spaces where it crosses that line into, okay, this is kind of gross. Like, players, especially with like owners, though, but that's another story in itself. But yeah, when you like make that decision, I think the incentives, again, like we talked about Brian Windhorst, now Chris Haynes, you know, many of these other reporters throughout the days, where it's just like, dude, even think about Stephen A. Smith, even though I disparaged him earlier, but that Allen Iverson relationship was kind of a big deal, you know, in the come up. And I think it's kind of like an ends justify the means type thing, where in this industry, that access is what it gets you. Now, like you said, it can't just be the whole thing. Like, I can't, if my source is like the official reporter for this player, I might need to expand my sources. I need to get some other perspectives. But yeah, it's just it's an interesting dynamic and interesting also time and circumstance. You just happen to be a reporter in Portland when the guy comes through, versus, you know, if you were in like Sacramento for years and you were the beat reporter, I could have been ugly for a while. The come up may never have presented itself. So yeah, it's a very fascinating media landscape. No, do want to go back before we put you all on the spot for way too early predictions. But with these trades, you know, you've all seen like the oddsmakers saying Milwaukee's going to win the East. And obviously that was before Drew got moved today. But I'm willing to be a Portland Bucks fan for this upcoming year. I don't know about you all, but I'm curious what you think about the West as far as, like, again, on October 1st, who do you all think is coming out of the West?
That's a really good question, because all the mega action has been in the East. It's like, I was telling Tara earlier today, I was like, it's like they're gearing up for World War III in the East. I mean, except for like Philly and Miami, but like everyone else got really good. And all the talent went basically one direction. They went west to the East. But the West feels like it's like a weird landscape of like teams that are like on their last gasp of the particular like build that they have. I mean, obviously not Denver. Denver just won, you know, but like we still have like the Warriors kicking around like in some form. I mean, they got rid of Jordan Poole but they basically have the same core that they were running with before. And like, but they're getting older and they got even older because they added Chris Paul. I forgot about Chris Paul, but like, I feel like it's much more open, but I still feel like it's probably Denver. I don't know who's going to do. I don't know what anybody can reasonably do about Jokic that happened between last year and this year, but that's just my perspective.
I agree. I think that's the most likely scenario. I too have been just looking east because it's fascinating to me, especially with regard to like what Joe Cronin has done in the last week, how he's giving them all ammunition to use against each other now. And so I'm just like, this is so brilliant, because right now, the next several years, they're all like do or die in this situation right now. And they are going to max out so many of them, not all of them. Like we got Boston is like a different story, but so many of them are going to max out on all of their assets to win right now, that by the time those guaranteed picks come around, like what's Milwaukee going to have left? You know, after they've spent everything to win these champions. So yeah, I've really been concentrating on the East, but you know, and Denver also has that ability to just quietly like fly. Everybody always forgets them. I completely forgot about them. Like I was thinking, let's see, Warriors, Lakers. Oh, I know there's another team out there until you mentioned them. But like Denver just has that ability to like fly under their radar. And I think that they probably have at least one more year that they can do it.
I'll tell you this. I forget about Denver all the time, just the same way I forget about Mountain Standard Time as being a real time zone. That's like, I think the magic right there. Like Denver is with a team. You're like, oh yeah, also Denver. But like, and they have like the best player in the whole league right now. And I still forget to think about Denver. They were in, I mean, like we play them a bunch of times every year and I still forget about Denver. I don't know what it is about my brain, but like Mountain Standard Time just doesn't exist. I'm more likely to think about the Suns, who are on their own time. They're on Arizona time. And I'm more likely to think about the Suns than I am to think about Denver. I don't know what that's about. Oh, I do want to say one thing about, since you were talking about like wild predictions, I do have like a little chaos prediction in my head that I'm secretly rooting for. And I didn't even tell this to Terry yet. I think this is the perfect time for Embiid to move west.
Uh-oh. This is what I need a soundboard for. I'm just I like it though. I don't know what's going to, it's time. Actually, I want to be that media person that they've been with like Dame and everyone else for the years. Yes, Embiid needs to go. What is Philly doing? Daryl Morey, you have let this man down.
Nothing's cooking in Philly. I'm telling you, like they still have to like figure out what they're going to do with Harden. Like, and everyone around them is getting really good. Like if Embiid is getting a little antsy, a little itchy, like this, it's a great time to move west when everyone's going east.
Okay. But the question is, where should we send him? Where should we be stumping? Where should we be going? Yeah. Why don't you send him there? Who's the Miami of the West that should get Joel Embiid?
I have a favorite landing spot for Joel Embiid in the West, but I don't, it will never, ever happen, because I think that this particular team is too invested in the current team to make that move. And I would love to see him play for the Kings.
Mm.
I think that he is very good at the things that Sabonis struggled with in the playoffs. And I think that they could win a championship with Embiid over Sabonis. But I know they love Sabonis, and they should love Sabonis because he helped them make that leap, and he did great for them. But I do think that he kind of got exposed in the playoffs. A lot of his weaknesses got exposed. He got like pushed around, and Embiid would not be that guy.
I can see him loving Sacramento too. Really enjoy it. I can see him really getting into it there. Send him somewhere where he would like to go.
I don't know why for a second I thought you were about to say Portland. I feel like
it's not on our timeline.
No, but
we would love it, but it doesn't really fit with the scheme that we've seen like now take shape.
Right.
Now I think the Sacramento is a little bit more like, you know, they feeling like they made the leap. But I also don't think that they're ready to move on to Sabonis. I think they just extended him. So, like, I think that they've kind of made that bed for themselves and they love him and they're going to ride that out. And I don't know, you know, maybe he really, like, studies the tape and sees the ways that, like, were, like, hard for him in those playoffs against the Warriors. But, like, I don't know. I think Embiid on the Kings would be super fun and they could win a championship.
The Bruce Poinsett Show will be back right after these messages.
Saving energy is bigger than saving a buck. It's protecting places we love so we can pass them down to people we love. It's saving on bills so that you can save up for big moments while creating a brighter future for all of us. So wherever you live, start saving with Energy Trust of Oregon. You can save up to 60% on energy efficient products at energytrust.org/save.
Welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show.
One thing I'll say about Embiid, because like for most of the time, yes, but there's something like, it is weird to me that like every playoffs, whenever they face Al Horford, it's with the Celtics because he was with Philly for that 1 year. Like, it's weird how much Al Horford has like the magic serum of just like, yeah, you're actually, oh, you'd like to put me on the block. I'm just going to shove you out to the 3-point line, do something. Without fail whenever it counts, which is always, I don't get it. But I mean, respect to Al Horford, I should say, I do get how it happens, but also I don't know if I blame that on Embiid or just Philly and whoever is coaching every year and how that keeps happening. But it's interesting. And also, just since we're talking about chaos, can we just have a moment of appreciation for the chaos agent that is James Harden? Because that press conference in China was amazing. Daryl Morey is a liar.
Let me say that again in case you missed it. that was amazing. And I, also this whole summer, since you've been like tuned out of the Dame thing, like what you've missed is like every once in a while, James Harden's people will be like, he's here too. He's here too. It's like, oh yeah, don't forget about James Harden. And the fact that like James Harden is like so, like we keep forgetting about him, like Rose forgets about, you know, Mountain Time. It's like, oh yeah, James Harden is still out there causing chaos. You're right. Oh, thank you for that memory.
That feels like a lifetime ago. And I know it shouldn't feel like a lifetime ago, but it does feel like a lifetime ago. Because in my head, James Harden is always on a trade request. I don't know why, but like, is he, you know, he's just, in my head, he's always, I don't know. I just always assume that James Harden has a trade request out there.
He is the, I can't figure out the acronym in my head right now as we're recording, but he's the greatest trade requester of all time. Like, I don't think it's even a competition. Like this last, before, what was it, leaving Houston, just wah. Like, I mean, I guess OKC doesn't technically count, but I don't know. These leaving the Nets, where I will say, I think his decision to leave the Nets has acquitted itself well, because that turned out to be an absolute train wreck. But just, I give the man credit as far as just like working the media. And I think that's why I love the press conference from this summer the most, because there are elaborate ways to do this. There's the just I'm just going to mess around in your face way to do it. But just like phone camera in like a warehouse, just in the middle of the room. I'm just like, this is great. You are an absolute savant at this. And it's the conversation around Harden is always interesting because it's like he had his like redemption moments in the playoffs and then his opposite of redemption moments as that series ended. But if that feels like a lifetime ago, like the same way you're talking about that press conference, like, oh yeah, that's right. Didn't he have those 40 point games against Boston? What? Remember that?
I've always been really intrigued by him because of his talent and, you know, the decision that Oklahoma City made to trade him, I think was pretty like groundbreaking. And it's like, wow, this guy this good, but we just can't afford it. We have to send him somewhere. And that was just kind of like, whoa, okay, we're kind of entering a new era here. And despite the fact that he gets lots of attention for his the way that he does or does not return to his teams, other than that, he just kind of like keeps it pretty quiet. And I sometimes I'm like, I want to know more. I want to know more about what's going on behind those eyes, because, you know, he'll come out and he'll disrupt things, but at the same time, he kind of holds it all inside. And so I've always just thought, what would it be like? What would it be like to be inside James Harden's head? And I betcha, like, if we had James Harden on our team, I betcha I could figure out things to cheer for him. You know, I'm sure I could if I got to know him, but he just hasn't been here yet. So not yet.
James Harden is one of those players that I find really interesting because he leans into like public perception sort of in this way that's like, but he's tight-lipped about it. You're right, Tara. He doesn't like go out and like, I mean, so he's the press conference in China is kind of wild, but like a lot of the times what he does is he just lets the media run rumors about him and he doesn't really disrupt them. He just lets them do it. And like, remember like the fat suit rumor? Like he sometimes kind of fed that. He never really denied it really. And he sort of fed it sometimes, but like never confirmed or denied and never really talked about it actually himself, just like through like his like social media activity. And I don't know, like maybe he's like liking tweets or something about the fat suit, but like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, he doesn't really spread rumors, but he perpetuates them.
Yeah.
It's actually really funny to me, by the way, that you were like talking, Bruce, about like access journalism, because does anybody have access to James Harden?
Good question.
That's a good question. I'm trying to. Was there a James Harden person?
I bet if we were in Houston, we would know, because I think that's where he was most accepted and understood the best. So whoever was covering Houston while he was there.
It's just really interesting because like you just never really get the feeling that any of these guys are James Harden guys. Like there aren't like a lot of leaks that come out of it like around him. And I don't know, like he just feels a little enigmatic in a time where like everybody seems to have a guy.
It's just like he's a fast, I mean, in a variety of ways, but really just a fascinating case as a player. Like he averaged what, 36 a game, 37 a game?
A triple double for how many years?
Yeah, like, you know, obviously like the MVP and everything, but like, I don't know. Like, Terry, you're better than me as far as the idea of if he came to Portland, I'd find something to like about him. I don't want to think about that. I like hating James Harden. It's a nice comfort space for me. But
I totally get that. Oh, can we talk about another player? Yesterday, we were with a bunch of Blazer fans, and somebody brought up the fact that there was a rumor that in all of these flipping, that Chris Paul was mentioned. And I was like, no, seriously? And I don't know who mentioned it where, but apparently it was brought up somewhere. But it reminded me of what you were saying about Scoot cheering on his teammates at Summer League. Now imagine Scoot cheering on DeAndre Ayton And Aiden going from having Chris Paul yelling at him to having Scoot, younger, less experienced, but so positive, I'm excited to see what that might look like.
Hard agree. You know, I saw some of those clips from the Blazers account of just like, you know, DeAndre coming to the practice facility and just, you know, obviously it's one of those off-season things where it's, we can make a big deal about just a small clip or, you know, the Ben Simmons workout photos. I love those. But I think there's something to it. And just like, yeah, the prospect, one, just from an entertainment standpoint of Scoot just throwing lobs to Shaden, lobs to DeAndre, lobs to Jeremy. Like, I know you all count the dunks in the game. Like, you got something this year.
The most important statistic out there, dunks.
Right.
It's funny, Chris Paul, like, I feel like, has a lot of like interesting relationships with his centers. Cause when I was hearing about like that DeAndre Ayton might be on his way here, and I knew that like he had kind of been scapegoated a little bit and when the Suns made the finals or whatever, like what he was and what he wasn't. But like I just like had this flashback when I was thinking about Chris, what his relationship with Chris Paul must have been like. Remember how Chris Paul used to just openly scream at DeAndre Jordan when they were on the Clippers? And like, I think it was a Portland game where there is that like epic clip of him screaming at DeAndre Ayton to put that ball up in the hoop because he picked up a rebound and he didn't put it back to like with time left. And he just let the clock run out. And I remember like, and it was like Chris Paul, like little angry guy screaming, like, put the ball up. And like nothing happened. But like Chris Paul has like a really like, I feel like he's very type A or something, because he wants his centers to do exactly what he wants them to do. And it's not that he was wrong, but he like, I don't know, like guys like that, like they put it all out there on the court and like they're not taking care of it in-house, like in the locker room or whatever. It's like in front of us for all of them to see. Imagine what it must be like in the locker room when they're actually in private.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even I'm still curious to see this Chris Paul, Draymond Green locker room is going to look like in Golden State. Because on one hand, I mean, we saw with OKC where you put Chris Paul with a group of like all young guys, you can elevate a team. But also he has like, it almost feels like that shelf life isn't the word, but that relationship with teammates, like, it noticeably sours like quickly. you have the good year, then I mean, we're just talking about Harden before. That ended very badly. But they got to what, game away from the finals, and maybe Chris Paul's hamstring going out from the finals, if we're being real about it, against the fully souped up Warriors. So
You know, it strikes me that all these teams that we're talking about and these players that we're talking about who made it really far from the outside anyway, as fans of other teams, seem very unpleasant. And it seems like it would be really hard to like have some of these players to like have to root for on your team. But that sort of also begs the question, is like Portland has worked so hard to have like quote unquote nice guys who don't wreck the boat, who all get along really well. What would it be like if they interjected somebody like our 6 months with Josh Hart, who like held players accountable? And like, I remember being at that Sacramento game and he called everybody in and he yelled at everybody and they went out there and won that game because they had somebody like that. So I'm also a little curious about what it would be like to, and if Portland will ever take a chance and find somebody who's willing to like maybe be a little bit of the bad guy publicly.
It's reminded me of my grief of Josh Hart leaving.
I would love to be a fly on the wall for when it's time for Chris Paul to try to like lead in the Golden State locker room and when there's like disagreement or discourse about it, because I'm very curious. Because the reason to bring Chris Paul in is because he's like a seasoned vet, a proven winner, but he's going to be in a locker room with a bunch of guys who have a bunch of rings now, and he is ringless. And are they going to really listen to him when they disagree among like the the team. Like, I don't know. Would you listen to Chris Paul if you're Clay or Draymond? I mean, like, Draymond's got those rings and he's going to flash them in your face. Like, are you really going to like have Chris? Is he really going to let Chris Paul push him around?
When Clay does that? We think about all those clips from last year of Clay. And then Devin Booker is just like lighting him up, but you know, four. it's going to be fun when it blows up. I'm not saying it's going to, but.
Delicious.
But it is.
Okay, so
I'll pull up.
I have a question for you guys. We've been talking, you know, about the Blazers and the new Blazers. And, you know, before the Dame trade, it was clear. Youth. You know, go for as young as we possibly can with as high upside as we can. And now, you know, bringing DeAndre Ayton in kind of makes you go, oh, okay, like we're still young, but like maybe we're going to be trying a little bit harder to win. And then as more players get added, I wonder where that's going to go. But where my question is heading is that I've been concerned about the fact that these young players, you know, are young and they don't have there's not a lot of deep winning experience on the roster. We have Jeremy Grant, who was he went to the Final Four in college and, you know, lots of first round exits in the NBA. Other than that, like, I wish there was. And so where this is leading is like back when they were talking about Miami and like maybe Kyle Lowry and people were like, Kyle Lowry. I was like, wait, I take 3 months of Kyle Lowry to show guys how it's done. I would have taken, you know, 6 months of Drew Holiday. You know, I'll take, you know, some Malcolm Brogdon just to have like a couple guys who can talk about like what a year is like when you go into the final or, you know, when you go deep into the playoffs, how to get yourself ready for that. I don't know. What do you guys think about? Or should we just be like, no, youth.
I mean, Ayton and Williams are both like, you know what it's like to experience deep playoff runs.
I forgot about Williams. Yes, I'm excited about Time Lord.
I mean, and Ayton's been to the finals. He's been scapegoated in the finals before.
So we've got youth and finals. Okay, problem solved.
I do think that I am a little curious about what they decide to do, if they decide to bring in a veteran guard or not, because Ant as the vet feels like a little bit of a lift, because like we've talked about before on our podcast, Tara, like he's not like a loud leader. He's like maybe a lead by example guy. And like now he's like been given the keys to like lead the guards. And I don't know necessarily what that's going to yield. I don't necessarily think that they all need like a heavy-handed mentor or anything, but like Ant has experience. Shaden has a year of experience. Like the guard situation, there's not even that much NBA experience in among our guards, let alone, I guess Matisse plays some guards, so Matisse, but I don't know, like it just feels like quite a young group for like there to be just Ant to guide them.
And like, well, I guess we'll see what happens with Brogdon, but that is an interesting point as far as the lack of experience there. And then also just like, if we're just being real about competition in that space, like, you know, Scoot has the keys, or Ant also has the keys, but Shaden's kind of an important piece in this second year. Like that's, you know, when we're going back to like the 2-point guard ish lineup again, is going to be interesting again, seeing where Shaden goes after saying, I had a really kind of dark thought while watching Summer League, not to dampen the things on Shaden, but, and maybe this isn't a dark thought, but walk with me here. What if Shaden is J.R. Smith? Like, I think J.R. Smith gets a bad rap for some like the context and that obviously that play in the finals, but like he came in the league out of high school. He was like pretty good sixth man with like a contender Denver team for that first part of his career, but obviously overshadowed. And then, you know, kind of bounced around, finally found Cleveland and found, became a surprising defensive specialist. But I say this to say that when I see with, like, I was talking with a friend about the potential trades during the year of, like, what can the Blazers do to, like, you know, when I was still holding on to, we're going to make the move and we're going to go for it with Dame. We're going to do it one more time. And admittedly, a lot of people do not want me, like, to hear me talking about, well, Shaden seems like an asset. And then I was like, well, are you trading him for Kevin Durant? I was like, I don't feel like that's his value right now. I could be wrong. I like Shaden. I really enjoy watching. I think he has a lot of potential, but it's that, I don't know. Expectations and potential are always an interesting thing. And, like, the situation is going to be interesting because now he's playing behind Ant. Like, well, I mean, I guess technically he was playing behind Ant last year too, but not in a situation where they're probably going to sit Ant like they sat Dame and then just moved it forward. So, like, I'm very curious. And that has nothing to do with it. I guess the J.R. Smith thing came from some interesting defensive lapses that I saw in Summer League where I was just like, this is concerning. Houston just made like a 7-point run in 10 seconds on their summer. How did that happen? Anyways, not to dampen the things, but curious if anyone had any thoughts about my hesitation, I guess, in anointing Shaden.
I have thoughts, but Rose, do you want to go first? Do you have thoughts?
I'm still thinking through mine, so you go ahead.
Okay, I think I say this as, like, I clung to the possibility of Shaden all last year to keep my head above water. That was how I got through the season. So I am over the moon excited about Shaden. Also the fact that he dunks, and he doesn't just dunk, he dunks beautifully with more form and style as if he were a gymnast getting graded on it. Love Shaden. But I also see what you're talking about, because we don't know. I mean, we were all just, like, in our heads last year, just trying to enjoy whatever it was that we could. And that's what we were able to grasp onto. But I think the thing about J.R. Smith is that he became the guy, for whatever reason, that players wanted. You know, like, that's with one big exception. That was what LeBron wanted. That was who LeBron wanted. And I think that's important. And I don't know why, but if Shaden were to become a guy where, like, say Scoot ascends or somebody really ascends and they're like, I want Shaden with me, then, you know, I am fine with that. But the other thing to say about Shaden, to kind of go back a little bit, Shaden, Scoot, and Anfernee, none of them have competitive, but between high school and the NBA, they don't have any competitive experience. You know, Anfernee didn't go to college, and he, you know, worked out at IMG for a year before he came in. Shaden attended, but did not, you know, play in college. And then Scoot was on Ignite for 2 years, but that team is not set up to win. And that concerns me more than anything, is that just he hasn't been surrounded by people, you know, trying to get him to win. But anyway, with regards to Shaden, I think that his growth is, we're really going to see that growth is not linear. Like we saw in that one Summer League game, it was like, oh boy, what's going on here? So everyone's going to know who he is now. They're going to throw themselves at him. Like, those last 10 games where he played so well, it's going to be a completely different ball game now that there's, like, a scouting report on him. But I think it's too early to give up. And I'm not saying that you were saying that we should give up, and being concerned, I think, is fine. But I also think that Mike Schmidt's, like, has a pretty good eye for talent, and he was pretty smart to take Shaden as a pick.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Again, Tara Rose, thank you for your time today, and enjoy the rest of your Sunday in this new, young, promising Blazer team.
Yeah, we got to catch up with you, you know, a little ways into the season. We'll all figure out how our feelings are doing and how it's going.
Just crossing my fingers for good, good vibes.
Do us a favor, Bruce. Have us back in like 3 years when Damian Lillard and Giannis have gone back to back, and we'll talk about who's going to have the better career reflection between him and Anthony Davis.
Ooh, I like it. I like it. We're going to hold out for Dame to finally get his recognition over Anthony Davis. It will happen.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Again, you can catch us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7, or you can catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. If you want access to exclusive bonus coverage, you can go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett, and make sure to follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's numbers with a Z, or on the Numbers Podcast Network on all podcasting platforms, or thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a Z.
Support for The Numbers comes from HealthShare Oregon. A well-child doctor appointment is a safe and easy way to stay up to date on routine screenings. You can also get protected from diseases like measles and even some cancers. More at healthshareoregon.org/wellness.